Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And tonight we're going to be talking about the beauty of nature, so please feel free to participate or just to listen. And so let me welcome Kat. Kat, how are you tonight?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good.
A wonderful hot day here in Brisbane.
How hot is it?
31 degrees, well, 31 centigrade, which is 87.8 degrees Fahrenheit. Did the conversion this time.
Ah, well, that's pretty hot.
Almost 88 degrees.
Yeah.
Yes, well, it is when you factor in that we've been having a lot of storms, so things are very humid.
Oh, boy. Well, humid at 88 is pretty darn hot, that's for sure. We're coming into some spring-like weather this week, but we've had a lot of that going on here in central New York this winter. It's been one of the mildest winters I've ever remembered, and I'm not upset about it. But we just went through a cold snap, and tomorrow it's going to be 49 degrees Fahrenheit. I didn't do the conversion on that, but that's very mild. Freezing is 32 Fahrenheit. So
yeah.
So nature, right?
Right. That's all part of nature's way.
Yeah. And there's not much we can do about it except enjoy it the best we can, and so much of it is there to be enjoyed.
Yes. And what would life be if we didn't have nature being connected to our planet and experiencing the wonder of the beauty that is this amazing planet Earth that we live on?
Mm. Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so many people are disconnected, David, don't you feel?
Yes. You know, I have this friend, God bless him, he would prefer to be inside. And I don't understand that attitude at all. I mean, talk about disconnection. To me, you know, life happens out there. And, of course, you know, when we have inclement weather, it's nice to be inside. And sometimes we have to be inside for work or whatever it is that we need to do in our lives. But you know, it's the outer world where I want to be and where I enjoy being.
Yes, I agree. I grew up going camping and getting about and learning about the animals and the environment. And, you know, our ancestors lived in one with nature, whether they were Western, Eastern, Indigenous, they all lived in some sort of synchronicity with nature. That's why we have harvest festivals. That's why we observe different times, different solstices and different times of the year. Because our ancestors were very aware of being in sync with nature. And if you watch anything to do with the naturalists, I see it, you know, David Attenborough's work, you see how the animals are in sync with the planets, with the rains, with the droughts, the plenty, the lack, the ebb and the flow. And we as human beings have the ability to recreate nature as well within our own environments if we want, through plants and aquariums and through gardening, and you know, that beauty is, it's unsurpassed. It's amazing.
It is amazing. You know, I think back to my own childhood, and my happiest memories had to do with being outside. You talked about camping. My family did a lot of camping. In fact, they owned a camp on one of the Finger Lakes here in central New York, and we would almost literally spend the summers out there, at least every weekend, and there'd be a couple of weeks where we'd live out there, and it was very rustic. It was just a cabin with a big open screen porch, and we slept out there. So you could hear the birds singing in the morning. You could hear the water lapping up against the shore at night. You could hear the crickets. It was just a wonderful, wonderful memory. And, you know, I think of other things that felt so freeing to me, like skiing down a ski slope. My spirit would just be set soaring. And as I discussed with you before the show began, there are very few things in life that make me feel as connected to my spirit as nature does. And I'm so grateful for that. I really do feel like a free spirit when I'm out in the open, when I'm hiking. There's nothing like being at the ocean or on top of a mountain and taking in the vistas. It really just fills me up with such incredible joy and peace. And, you know, I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, it gives you a perspective about life that you just can't get if you remain in disconnection. And for me, I agree with you that it enlivens your spirit and therefore your spirituality. And what is spirituality if it is not connection? And the greatest way to feel connection to your own self is to be letting go of all pretenses and just sitting in nature as an animal amongst the plants like the others and letting go. Okay, you may be eating food that you didn't catch, but you are in there with the other animals and being a part of the ecosystem. When we are in suburbia with roads and the noise and just the droning of people, we can forget that that's what we really truly are. We are an animal that walks this planet just as much as any other. We just happen to have a greater self-awareness and an opposable thumb, which helps us to make some amazing things. I mean, human beings are amazing. But, you know, we're thinking, I had a rush of thoughts of different memories I had as a kid camping. And one of them was walking a darn Emu Creek, which is in the Blackbutt Ranges in the hinterland behind the north of Brisbane. And I just decided I'd randomly lift up rocks. I don't know, I was a kid, and I lifted up this rock and I had my hand to the right of the rock with my left, and then I had this gut feeling to just wrench my hand away, which I luckily followed because a little trapdoor spider and went to attack whatever the prey was it thought might be there, and they're highly venomous. And probably I would have met my end there playing on the banks of that creek. But that's part of nature too, you know. She's life. She's all life, and life eats life. And, you know, you don't want to eat a piece of rotten fruit. You want to eat a piece of living fruit. But life consumes life, so life can continue on. And, you know, so part of nature isn't necessarily all beauty. There is a destructive element to it, and we've seen that. We see that in the natural disasters. We've certainly seen it this summer here in Australia with the naturally lit fires. There were some so-and-sos who lit some fires that became firestorms, which were not naturally lit. But You get them from lightning strikes. You get floods. You get earthquakes. You get cyclones, which you guys call hurricanes. And you get tornadoes. All of these developments are there as well within nature. But why are they there? You know, they're there to clean things up. They're there to sort things out. And some of them are there in reaction to what the humans have done. And that's probably a conversation for another show. But nature, she's to be respected. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No question about it. And, you know, there's a great mystery connected to nature, too, that I think a lot of us can't comprehend. But it is, it's a beautiful force. And, you know, you were talking about the rock and the spider. For some reason, it was taking me back to the Grand Canyon where we went on a camping trip. And I'll never forget going down a switchback trail on a mule. And the mule would come to the edge of a cliff and stick its head down to eat some foliage. And it's like, you know, it was as if it was forming a slide for me to not go down, because I would have tumbled into the canyon. But, you know, it was a hair-raising moment, but it was such a happy memory, and it was connected with just the grandeur of this incredible, incredible canyon that was carved out by water. And you talked about hurricanes and cyclones and that kind of thing. The force of water is such an incredible thing. But it is to be respected. There's no question about that.
You know, after all that's happened here in Australia this summer, I don't know about other parts of the country, but we suddenly have a beautiful, beautiful gift, which is all of these little butterflies that have come out of their metamorphosis. The place is surrounded by butterflies. Everywhere we go, first of all, there's little buttercup butterflies, and now there's little black and white butterflies as well. So we've got the contrast of the two types of butterflies. And they're just nature's little gift. They're nature's reward. It's like these little blessings fluttering past you as you drive or walk down the street, saying, they're there, everything's going to be okay. Because, you know, we've been through the fires and then we had the floods. And now we have the calm and we have the reward of survival, which is the butterflies. And it is just stunning. It is absolutely stunning. And you would have seen some amazing little creatures in that canyon. Would you have not?
Oh, you know, I'm trying to think back. It was so long ago. I don't recall any of the creatures that I encountered there, but I certainly have a vivid memory of going down those switchback trails that were carved into the rock. It was just absolutely amazing. And I do remember camping out and having bears come through the campsite at night. One night there was a bear that came up to the picnic table, and somebody, I'm not sure if it was Dad or Mom, had left the ice chest out there. And it's amazing, you know, it was a steel ice chest, but that bear, you know, just really, really almost crumpled it. It was amazing. And I can remember another occasion, not involving a bear, but my former partner, Al, and I were camping out on Martha's Vineyard, which is a beautiful, beautiful island off of Cape Cod. And we had taken a bicycle trip and went over on the ferry and bicycled to this campground that was set amongst the pines, and there were pine needles all over and nice spacious sites. And one morning we got up and we saw a skunk walking away with our egg carton. So there were no eggs that day. But I'm glad we didn't surprise the skunk and get another kind of surprise.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yes, I would have let it have the egg.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I just...
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, well, you've made me think about times that I've seen things. I keep a keen eye out for injured animals on the road that I can take off to the wildlife center or the vet. And I just love animals. I love them so much. They don't try and be anything but who they are, and they're on a mission in life to survive, to breed, to eat, and to be happy. You know, that's their position. They tend to be happy. And I love that about animals. But the platypus, which is one of nature's great jokes, is very elusive, very difficult to see. And I remember seeing a platypus at Carnarvon Gorge, which is in the west, southwest of Queensland. And I'll never forget, we walked across the bridge. We were very, very quiet. They told us there was a possibility that there was a breeding pair in the creek. And I got real quiet. I got real low and waited for people to go. And I just sat and I waited, and I was rewarded by seeing this platypus. And so I started to leave the camp early in the morning and sneak off down to watch the platypus. I don't know if my parents knew I did it. But I just felt so much delight to see this little platypus being so happy and rooting around in the pebbles on the floor of the creek, which was crystal clear water, getting all the little grubs and the little shrimp and you know, all the little creatures that it likes to eat. They're just amazing. They're amazing little creatures. And the echidnas are the other one that is one of nature's jokes as well. I've seen them around. Unfortunately, I ran over one when I was driving in the middle of the night one time. It was like a split second saw it run over it. So I always felt bad about that. But they're fantastic, and I think it doesn't matter where you go in the world, you can be inspired by nature. And one of the people who has inspired me in aquarium keeping is Takashi Amano, who has unfortunately passed away in 2016. But he was a wildlife photographer, and he wanted to recreate what he saw out in the world by making nature aquariums. And he started the whole aquascaping nature aquarium thing. And he was a master. He only lived to 61, but his legacy lives on. And if you can ever get to Lisbon in Portugal, you can see the Floresta Submersa, which is a massive 40-meter nature aquarium. But you can see him doing his project on YouTube of recreating nature, and he recreates scenes from all over the world, West Africa, South America, you know, anywhere that he went where he felt inspired. He would recreate it in an aquarium using rocks, using wood, and using plants, and then matching the fish to the plants. And the idea would be to allow the fish to feel like they were in nature themselves. So they'd color up the way that they would normally do in nature, and they would start to behave the way that they would normally do in nature. I just find it fascinating and just a marvelous thing that we can bring nature into our own homes in these multidimensional ways.
Let me ask you a question. I know that your aquarium is a passion of yours. How did you get started with that?
One of my older brothers wanted a goldfish, and my mother brought home a little aquarium, a little one-foot aquarium, when I was 8 years old. And she brought in a couple of little goldfish, and I was fascinated by them. I loved having the water in the house. My parents always had books, as we've always been bookworms, and I just started to love the thing of beauty that was alive, that was the aquarium around the books. And so I've always felt like books and aquariums make a home. And I just caring for them. They go through life cycles. It's a bit of a nerdy thing as well for me, because I love chemistry, and there's a lot of chemistry involved with keeping an aquarium. You have to be aware of nitrites, nitrates, ammonia, pH levels. You have to be aware of temperatures. Different fish require different temperatures, different pH levels. You might go into an aquarium shop and see a fish you've never seen before, and then go and study it and find out where it's come from in the world and what kind of aquatic conditions it requires to survive. And you're not necessarily going to go out and start an aquarium for it. You certainly wouldn't put it into your existing aquarium, but it's just a creature that's fascinating. There's something fascinating about creatures that live under the water. Water is the element of emotion, and I find for me water calms my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a peaceful thing. When I was raising my sons, my two eldest boys, I needed a focus that would calm me, because they were quite difficult kids. And it wasn't just them that made things difficult. It was situations at school and situations with their father and the extended family in that direction. So to have a water-based focal point to just sit and stare and watch little fish doing what they do, and then being able to fuss on them, you know, put plants in for them, that all of that gave me so much pleasure. And it really, I think, helped diffuse a lot of feelings that I had during that time. But I found too that, you know, water can contain emotion. And I forget the name of the gentleman, the scientist who found that out. And he was on What the Bleep, or the photographs were of different intentions that were put into water, and then he photographed them. But we're finding out more and more that water can contain knowledge and emotion. And it's really powerful. I think all the elements are incredibly powerful. But that one in particular I identify with. And I think that a lot of people do. That's why they like to live by water. People like to look at water. It's very restful for the eyes. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I just love being at the ocean and sitting on the sand or walking along the shoreline and watching the waves rolling in. They're so majestic. And I was thinking, as you were talking about the creatures in the water, I was thinking about my ex-wife, who was an environmental conservationist. And one year during the end of her college career, she worked at a nature center located on the ocean, and she introduced me to tide pools and all the life that exists inside of them. And talk about creatures, my goodness, there were so many different, you know, sea urchins and crabs, and I don't remember all of them, but it was amazing the life that's contained in a little tide pool. And just to let you know, we do have a caller. I would like to go and see if they would like to check in, if there's anything they would like to share. And if not, if you just want to listen, that's fine, but let's say hello to you. Hi, area code 708. Who is this, please? I guess they're just listening, and that's wonderful. We're grateful to have you with us tonight. So, at any rate, you were talking about the emotions of water. I was thinking about plants and how they respond to words, and that they too seem to have emotions.
Plants are glorious. They're such wonderful creatures. They are, and there are so many different types of plants, and you know, we have plants that sort of borderline animal status, like the coral, and we have carnivorous plants, and we have plants that are really incredible in the way that they've adapted so that they can have symbiotic relationships with, for example, ants. Or there's that stinky Indonesian plant that has that big spire that gives off a dead smell, dead meat smell, so that it will attract flies, which will then cross-pollinate for it. You know, and without plants, the animals don't feel comfortable. Plants really create a home. And we know this because we use wood to create our own homes. Without plants, we wouldn't be anywhere. The structure of plants is quite interesting, the way that they photosynthesize, the way that they inspire and respire, I should say. And did you ever watch the David Attenborough's Life of Plants series? That was just beyond amazing.
I never have, but I've heard about them, and I'm sorry that I missed them.
Yeah, I sort of grew up watching nature shows, and if I was feeling sad or spooky, you know, I'd go for a nature show, and that would make me feel better. And if I was sick or something like that, just watching nature would bring me back to some place of happiness within myself.
Mm-hmm.
Just something amazing about it. But talking about the element of air has quite the little friends in there with the birds. They're the best. I love the birds. We used to keep birds till I found out that how highly allergic I was. They were the reason I was sick all the time. But birds are the best, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I love birds. We have bird feeders, hummingbird feeders. I absolutely am in awe of those tiny little birds and how they can just position themselves right in midair and drink from a flower or from a feeder. I think they're absolutely amazing.
They've got such great personalities, too.
Oh, they do.
They're cheeky and mischievous.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Yeah. Some of them are pretty tame. Especially. They'll come right up to you and challenge you, as you say. Yeah.
Yeah, they know who they are. They're not to be underestimated, but they really do know who they are and what they want. And they're so incredibly beautiful. You know, the African grey parrot is probably not the most beautiful parrot, but it's the most intelligent. I think it has the intelligence of a 5-year-old child.
Really?
Which is pretty, I'm pretty sure it's the one that has the intelligence of a 5-year-old child. Your bigger parrots, they live for 100 years. A lot of people over here, because we have so many parrots, the self-crested cockatoos and the galahs and that. You have to will them on to family members or the Parrot Rescue Society, who will then rehome them, because they're going to outlive you.
Yeah. I have a friend that had a parrot, and the parrot is still alive, 40 years later, and still going strong. Yeah.
They're great. They're great little friends. They're so much fun, and they're so much mischief. And they're very, very loving. I'd love to tell a story of Govinda, who was he might be still alive. 22 years ago. Quarians or cockatiels, they live for about 25 years. So he could have died, or he could be still alive, I don't know. But I adopted him from a pet store. He was not hand-tamed. I was a student at the time, and I went to live out in the outback with my then boyfriend, and we lived at the Mary Kathleen Orchard, which is next to an old mine out in the Corella Valley, which is east of Mount Isa, on the way to Cloncurry, which is in northwest Queensland. And I desperately wanted him to love me and all of that. And I had him out of his cage quite a bit. And I called him Govinda, which is the Sanskrit name for God. And he was just a really glorious, natural-coloured quarian. So he was grey with orange cheeks and a beautiful song. And eventually he started to fly to me, and he would try and eat the ends off of the guys who worked with us, their cigarettes, and he did some crazy stuff. Anyway, cut a long story short, we'd have to go into town sometimes, and I eventually fell pregnant with my oldest son, Liam, and I had to go away. And when I came back, Govinda was gone. I need to backtrack. I had started to introduce him to the other birds in the trees in the neighbourhood, and I'd started to get him to go and fly out and meet the other birds and then come back to me. And he would get beat up because those birds were, and he wasn't part of the crew, and he was part of my flock, not theirs. But then when I went away and I came back, Govinda was gone, and somebody said that he had flown with them. He'd actually followed the car out to the mine, and he met with another flock, and he'd flown off.
Really?
And I went, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. So I pined for him, and suddenly one day, about 6 weeks later, he came back with his girlfriend, and he would whistle to me in the language that he and I had, and then he'd whistle back to her in their language. And one night, I asked him, I begged him to stay home because there was a big storm. We had to go into town for some reason, and then I came back and he was still there. The storm passed, and the next morning, I knew he had to go. I knew that his real home was with that flock. And I sat on the back step with him, and he was on my shoulder, and we loved on each other, and I talked to him. And then when I was ready, I said, okay, there's your flock, because I saw his girlfriend. I said, there's your flock. Off you go. And he flew away, and he never came back. And it was a wonderful experience of allowing this bird to slowly reintegrate back into his natural environment and to commune with nature and the force of the need to be free in a way that you couldn't do it any other way, but to allow this bird to feel the freedom that he so much wanted. But he had to learn. He had to go through the whole trial and error of understanding what the other birds were doing and their society, because bird society is pretty complex. But, yeah, he left and... I still had other experiences with other birds out there.
What a wonderful story.
And I really, thank you. I really grew to love the outback living there. I didn't when I was a teenager living in Mount Isa. I didn't like it. It was red dirt and spinifex. But I didn't really have much experience with nature while I was living in town. Once I came back and I was out there, it was 80 kilometres away from Mount Isa. I got to know the birds, and that's when I really discovered nature in the outback. If you can ever get out, go in winter because it's hot. But it's worth it. Go in Australia's winter. That's your summer in North America, June, July.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a marvelous story. I was really, really feeling it, and thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, so nature, would love to hear from anyone who's listening about their experiences with nature and if you've had something similar. You know, have you had any other, interesting experiences with wild animals that have come and spoken to you and they've not attacked you or anything, they've just come and said hello? Have you had any experiences like that, David?
I once had an experience that I thought was amazing. It involved a squirrel, and I was sitting in this lawn chair at a friend's house, and I spotted a squirrel, and it started to approach me, and I thought, this is really unusual, because it was coming right up for me, and it came, and it sat right by my foot. I didn't move a muscle, and it almost seemed as if it was going to jump into my lap. I mean, I wasn't afraid of it. It didn't seem like it had rabies or anything like that. I just was in awe. It came and it sat right next to me, and I didn't move a muscle, and it was there for a good 5 minutes, and it just really, really moved me to see this creature that normally would go scampering away come right up to me like that.
Similar experience with a possum one time in the botanical gardens in the center of Brisbane. I was there with a friend. I was 18 and she was 17, so she couldn't go to the pub to drink. Probably get arrested, but we were students, okay? So we got some plonk and we went down to the park, which was at the botanical gardens. And the Australian possums are very cute. They're not like the North American opossum with the big scary teeth. They're incredibly cute little creatures, but they'll give you a nasty bite. And we were sitting there, and look, we were getting drunk, so we were loud. We were chat. And all of a sudden, this possum came up to me, and it sat on my lap. I had my legs crossed.
Are you serious?
It just sat on my lap. Yeah. Oh, it was bold as brass.
Oh, my.
And stupidly, probably because I had my inhibitions curtailed, I put my finger out at it and nibbled my finger, just a nibble, not a big bite. And then it looked me in the eye, and I looked it in the eye, and I said something nice to it, and off it went.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, wow, there you are.
Wow, that's something. Well,
yes.
We have domesticated some aspects of nature, you know, animals that have become our pets. It's like bringing nature into your house. Of course, it's a whole different set of circumstances from animals in the wild, but it gives us an opportunity to interact at a very interpersonal level with the animal kingdom. And what a joy it is to own a cat or a dog. I mean, it's a privilege to be able to have a pet and share a bond with an animal.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you know, I watched a documentary, cats are actually the only animal that's domesticated humans.
Oh.
Did you know that? That's what they consider that cats did.
Ah.
And if anyone has a cat in their house, they know that
yeah.
Well, the cat owns them.
Yes, absolutely.
No, they say cats have slaves and dogs have masters. It's definitely true.
Yeah.
Definitely true. I found out that my local Aldi is discontinuing their cat meat. And I said to the woman, I am going to get bullied. What are you doing to my life? My cat loves this Aldi cat meat. Now you're getting rid of it? What are you doing? He's a big fat ginger Tom, and he will just not be happy. So I've had to switch to a different brand of cat meat from a different shop. And, oh, yeah, it's already started.
Which cat is that?
The favorite. Prometheus, my big ginger Tom.
Ah.
Oh, yes.
I've got a couple of ginger Toms, too. I've got Pumpkin and Tiger, and I had another one named Sandstorm, and he would literally jump into my arms. He was an amazing cat. I just felt such for lack of a better word, such a rush when that cat would jump into my arms. Talk about affection.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
they do. They're wonderful. Prometheus is about 9.5 to 10 kilos. He's a big boy.
Yeah.
And in the morning, he lays on my tummy, and that's how he gets me up to feed him. And he knows he'll get me up because that's pressing straight on my bladder. That's going to get me up.
Yeah.
But we're talking about nature, and I started to think about where else in the world can we talk about, an island just off of Australia called New Caledonia. It's a French colony, and so everybody there speaks French, and the native people of New Caledonia are the Kanakas, and they're quite interesting people to look at. They were actually taken as slaves for the cane farmers in North Queensland for a long time till that was all abolished. But the landscape, I always wondered, why would they call this island, it's a big island, New Caledonia, which means Caledonia, of course, is for Scotland, where I was born. And then we went across, and they have valleys that look like lochs without the water.
Really?
And I thought, wow, yes. But it's the only place I've ever seen where you can go from beach, woodland, rainforest, open grassland, desert, and then back to rainforest and beach. Just amazing.
Wow.
And my favorite part of going there is the snorkeling. The sea snakes are stunning. The sea snakes everywhere. You can see to the bottom of the ocean floor. And when you go snorkeling, the fish are obviously friendly because so many people would be feeding them bread, but they are incredible. There's a little island that has just a lighthouse and a bit of a resort on it called Amity Island. We went up there, you can walk around it. And I didn't bother going on the glass bottom boat, which we could have gone on, because I was snorkeling and I was with them. It was amazing. I just absolutely loved that. But that's nature. She's incredible. And the beauty of her is beyond anything you can really muster up. Humans can only ever recreate her. She's the amazing creation. So if you could ever get to New Caledonia, I would recommend it. What an stunning, stunning place. It's actually where my partner and I became friends because we went to high school together. And
oh, really?
We're both there. Yeah, we went there for high school French. It was an excursion, 2 week excursion. But I didn't know at the time that the kids who were the best at French from year 11 were invited because it was actually year 10 excursion. I didn't know that. I just got this note, do you want to go to New Caledonia?
It
so we went along. It was great. Yeah.
It sounds like an amazing place.
Yeah. It's just stunning. There's so much. What's outside your back door? You're back onto Canada there in Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
The kind of terra firma that is around you must be absolutely incredible.
Yes, yes, it is. And, you know, we have such a dramatic change of seasons here. We get them all in force. And, you know, autumn is such a beautiful time of year when the leaves turn brilliant shades of crimson and bright fireball orange and yellow. And, you know, people will travel from all over the country to this part of the country, and especially into New England, to see the foliage in the autumn. It really is spectacular. And we have the Great Lakes. We live not far where I am. We live about 30 miles from Lake Ontario, which is the easternmost Great Lake. And the St. Lawrence River leads out of that up to Newfoundland, and there's a place before it joins with the lake called the Thousand Islands. It's just literally hundreds of islands in the Seaway. It's really an amazing place.
It sounds. And do you have really ancient forests?
We don't have so many of those. You know, the ancient forests that I think of are the redwoods and the Grand Sequoias out in California. I mean, some of those are older than the time of Christ. Most of the older forests in this part of the country have been eliminated, you know, due to the settlers that arrived and cut down the forests and turned them into farmland. And you know, it's sad because developers have really desecrated so much of the wilder areas, and it's becoming suburbia all over the place. The countryside has dwindled from what it was when I was a kid, and that's kind of sad to see. But there are a lot of wonderful places that you can go. The Adirondack Mountains are just a couple of hours from here, and there are, I believe, millions of acres there of unspoiled wildlands and lakes and mountains, and I've climbed several of the mountains there. It really is. It's a beautiful place to go.
It sounds like it. It sounds stunning. I know when I was in Missouri in 88, seeing my family there, it was just incredible, the beauty of their ranch, just their ranch. You know, waking up in the morning and seeing this landscape with this mist. It was December. We were hanging out for it to snow because we remembered snow from being kids in Scotland. And of course, the day after we left, it snowed. But it was just, but it was just an incredible place. And I mean, coming from a different country, there was a lot of things that you see that are different. But I remember standing on a hill looking over the town of Hamilton and looking up at the moon and the stars and knowing that my family and friends in Australia could see the same moon and stars.
Mm.
Because we're all on one planet and we're all connected by the same things. And this nature goes beyond us. It goes beyond this planet. It's galactic. It's cosmic. It's interstellar. And there's some amazing things that come from extraterrestrial nature. I remember reading an article about what people thought was blood falling from the sky in some parts of India. And people freaking out, it's revelations, all of that jazz. And one scientist collected some of it, and because it was wet and red. And he did an analysis and found that it was an extraterrestrial.
Really?
That must have come off of, a asteroid or meteorite that had broken up in the atmosphere. And people poo-pooed him. But another scientist in the UK tested his finding and agreed with him. So peer reviewed, and it was found to be real. And so, nature will populate herself in amazing ways. And so this extraterrestrial algae now lives here on the planet. Whether or not the conditions are right for it to thrive, I don't know. But, she's an incredible thing, nature. When you start to look outside of the planet and start to look at things like, the rings around Saturn. Wow. I mean, scientifically, we know why they're there, but they're held in the orbit. We can go into that, but wow. That's beautiful. Don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, everything we've talked about inspires awe in people. And I love the word connection that you've used a couple of times during the course of the show, because ultimately we are all one. We are all one with nature. We're part of nature, and we are connected. And I think it is so important that we cherish and preserve nature around us, because without it, we're not going to exist anymore.
Is bigger than any human race. Life is all that is, and all that is life. So, we either work with life or against it. If we work against it, then, we might line our pockets today, but tomorrow our children won't live on.
Right.
We need to really think about how we affect the planet and how life works with us and how we work with life, because I think the planet would go on quite happily without humans.
Mm.
I don't think that humans would go on very happily without the planet.
No.
Even if we all decided to get on spaceships and go and populate another planet, we've still got to respect our origins. We come from here. Yeah,
wow.
So connection's so important, so very important. We really need to put down money and start looking at love when it comes to the planet and our connection with her.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's probably a brilliant place to stop. If you'd be willing to honor us with a meditation, we are coming up to the end of the hour.
Okay, wonderful. So let's get comfortable, lay down or sit, and close your eyes. Take three long, deep breaths. And just relax into each.
It seems that we've lost Kat. So I'm going to continue with the meditation, if you bear with me for a moment. And so continue to breathe. Breathe naturally. And imagine yourself in a place that brought you great joy, a natural place. Perhaps it's the ocean. Perhaps it's the top of a mountain. Perhaps it's in your very backyard. And begin to use your senses to feel the breeze, to listen to the birds, to feel the water, to feel the air caressing your cheeks, to feel the land underneath you, to feel connected to all that is, because you are a part of creation, and creation is all around you, ever evolving, ever changing, ever nurturing, even when it is changing in a way that may seem harsh to you. It's all part of creation. It's all part of nature, and it's all natural, and you are a part of it too. And so now, in your mind's eye, see yourself getting up and walking toward something that's inspiring you. Perhaps it's a wave coming toward the shore. And you walk in and you feel the water rushing around your feet. And then you feel it as it flows back out into the ocean. Perhaps you open your eyes and take in a marvelous vista of the valleys below. And you may see an eagle flying by. And you're in awe of the majesty of that creature. Perhaps you're hiking up a trail and you see a little chipmunk just skittering across the trail and you smile. Whatever you imagine, that is something that connects you to this earth, to this world that we live in and cherish. And so now, continue to breathe. And when you're ready, open your eyes and realize that even if you do not feel like you are connected to nature now, to know that it's out there. It's out there to support you and nourish you and be grateful for all that is and knowing that we're all one at a basic level. And so I thank you for joining us tonight. Good night and God bless.